going to say.
I remember that. Hey, everyone. My name is Nachum Russell, or Russ to most people. And this is my friend Josh, who I'm actually staying at his house, so we don't have to have a split screen, which is pretty cool because anyone who watches this show generally knows that our screen is split in half, and hopefully we stay connected with whoever I'm chatting with. So I don't think we're going to have a bad connection tonight. That should be good. I'm just going to make sure that we're actually live. But
yeah, check. Why don't you check?
Yeah, Josh, introduce yourself.
My name is Josh Holbert, and I'm a professional dog trainer, co-owner, and head trainer at Julie's Canine Academy. And that's where we are right now. We're in my kitchen. We run the business out of our house. And yeah, Russ is hanging out, and we're going to do a little, what is this, an hour?
It's about an hour.
An hour talk about whatever we get into.
Yeah. So before we even start chatting, I'm going to say, because a lot of people might not know how this show works, it's not a Q&A. So even though it's cool to be able to ask Josh your dog training questions, because I know a lot of people like what Josh does, it's not a place for asking dog training questions per se, because I don't like doing Q&As online. There's other times for to ask questions. But oh, we also have a new microphone. So everyone, let me know if you can actually hear us.
Oh, yeah.
I should have asked that first. Yeah. It is on, but I've never used this microphone before. So let me know if you can hear us. And hopefully I can see comments.
Yeah. Oh, do you need me to get my phone out so we can see the comments?
Well, I'm gonna
bear with us. We're going to have this thing down. I want it to log in.
I'm guessing they can hear us because they're writing comments. So I can't really see the comments too well because I have the camera and the computer a little bit away from us so that we can make this nice angle and act like we're professional. Sounds good. Awesome. But really the idea of this show is just a nice conversation, not dog training questions. You guys are more than welcome to add to the conversation in the comments. And if I'm able to see them, I'll definitely throw that into the conversation. But in the meantime,
now I can see the comments.
Now you can see the comments. Okay, cool. So we could see like some of the Facebook comments. We won't see necessarily YouTube comments, but that's cool. I'm curious. I'm looking at there, but I should look at you because I'm talking to you. I'm so not used to it.
No, I guess
I'm used to looking at the screen to talk to people.
People are on the way for us to get comfortable and get into a conversation. This is new for me too.
Yeah. So I'm here watching you for a week train, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's been a good time so far, hasn't it?
Yeah. And I want to know though, because I never really did hear from you at all, how you got into training, why you got into training.
Oh, yeah, I can cover that real quick. I think it's a very similar story as everybody else. I had got a dog that was a little big. It was St. Bernard mix. It was a puppy, but he was a little unruly, tearing up the place a little bit. Not really tearing up the house, but like causing some issues, not really listening. And I knew dogs could listen. But the real reason that I really got into it was because I had a real bad shoulder injury at the time when I got the dog. And the dog, I couldn't walk. Because I needed two hands for this dog, you know? So that's when I went down the rabbit hole of learning about dog training. Because of course, before then, I didn't know that dog training was even a thing, honestly. But I had previously what I was working at that time, where I was working was in the human services field, where I already had, close to a decade of experience with dealing with behavior. So when I got into dogs, I combined the knowledge. There was about a year to a year and a half of just extreme digging for the knowledge and learning and putting myself in situations with dogs where I could learn and then tie my knowledge from what I learned in the human services field and put it all together and make it comprehensive for myself. It takes time to learn this stuff. I mean, we're still learning every day, but you need enough. It took me about a year and a half to have enough where I could go do it professionally, you know? And that was it. I mean, then I had my own career for a little while. I had my own company for almost 5 years. And then I came out to Julius County Academy, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So I love the background you have in it, because I also did similar background.
Yeah.
Right. I worked with people with developmental disabilities. I think that's the officially correct way to say it. And there's definitely a lot in common with dogs. So I'm curious because you said you took what you learned from there and used it with dogs.
Yeah.
To some people that can sound weird.
Okay.
Right?
Let me rephrase. I had an opportunity while I was in there to study under the behavioralist of the company, the best behavioralist in the company. And I admired him, and he had taught me, he introduced me to like the works of B.F. Skinner and behaviorism, you know, to open my brain and how environment and influences behavior and all this stuff. And it was just so new to me. I was so interested because I was working in these group homes where some of the people I worked with would get dangerous. If you if things went astray, it could be very bad. Yeah. Right. So I knew that it didn't have to be that way because I had enough experience working there that I seen that there was a reason for these behaviors and that we could dig deeper. It didn't just have to be that way. And so I get really deep into talking with him, and years go by, a couple years of that, I get a job where me and him are a team, and we're working on one of the most difficult individuals in our particular agency together, and we're developing a program. And in that process, it was about 3 months to develop the program, I learned how to view things behaviorally. He would give me books to read. I would read them. We'd have a three-hour car ride every day we worked together, and that was my chance to just pick his brain and learn. And then I'd get home, and I would apply it towards dogs, and I would learn dog behavior and how that goes. So I had this time span where I was able to pick a behavioral strain, learn about it. He gives me books and materials and focus it into dog training as well, because I knew I was leaving that career. I knew at that time, I knew I was going to be a dog trainer. But at that time, I also knew that I had the ability to mentor under somebody, even though it wasn't for dogs. He knew I was doing things with dogs. I learned the principles there through him, and I thank him for that, and it's helped me tremendously. It sped up my career because I had the knowledge, and then I just had to find the specifics of dogs, which was the really fun part, because getting into learning dog behavior and how to read dogs was addicting at that time. It was at that point in the career where you couldn't wait to wake up because you wanted to go learn more with dogs. And so that's how my knowledge came together in the beginning. That's how I was able to have just enough to then go to people's houses or develop a program and be able to help people.
Yeah, I think it's the idea of learning behavior before learning dog training is almost like is probably the best approach to learning dog training.
You can always tell the ones who have and the ones who haven't when it's other trainers, because I see a lot of trainers. Yeah. You can tell who's missing that background and who has that background. And for me, it feels like there's a hole and they're struggling. Some people might struggle if they don't have an understanding of dog psychology and behavior in general,
yeah.
And they're looking more at certain training techniques. You study training techniques, and then you go to train dogs because you know the techniques. But when they fail, you don't understand the behavior enough to how those techniques work or how to adapt them. So you struggle. So the foundation of dog training is, guess what, guys? Dogs.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah, and
behavior in general for animals, for mammals.
Something that I think is, I don't want to say, I don't think I'm some sort of like person to speak on dog training as a big thing, but I think that like a lot of people jump straight to technique and how things work before understanding behavior and I guess why it works like that in the first place, which leads people to a dead end very quickly, right? If you only know what tools to use and how to use a tool, but you don't know why the tool works with that animal, why it works to change behavior, then you're going to be stuck when that tool fails, which it will at some point. Every tool will not work.
And you'll be calling everybody up in the industry saying, hey, what do I do now? And you'll get an answer and it might work and it'll float you by for a little while and then it won't work. And you have to call and say, hey, because you can't think for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the foundation yet to be able to see. When you have the foundation, you can develop your own techniques because you understand how it all works.
Right.
You know, it takes time to get that. But I encourage that to be the focus first, because then it doesn't matter the tools. You're free. You understand. You know, like I'm not going to use names of you, but I have a buddy that says, just give me a rope and I'll train a dog. Like, give me some food and a rope. It doesn't really matter about the tools once you have the knowledge. The tools, though, will make it easier and more convenient for us and the dog and everybody involved. So of course, it's great.
Yeah, one of the things I appreciate, I've only been here for 2 days. It feels like I've been here a whole week.
I know. Is it Tuesday?
Yeah.
It is literally Tuesday because we have done this stuff nonstop. Shadow Week is nonstop, especially when you're staying here. We're talking dogs and where there's potty breaks. It's just nonstop. It's almost like being at college kind of.
Yeah.
I'm drinking coffee.
I was telling Julie today, I'm tired. I'm like, I haven't done anything. I've just been sitting on a couch listening to someone talk.
But your brain is constantly, you're there. You're in that moment and I'm doing the teaching and I'm there and I'm looking at everybody and they're there. They're all investing so much energy all day long. Even if you don't do anything, you're exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted right now. I know you're exhausted. So forgive us if we stutter along here, but it's tiring, but it's fun and you learn a lot. And like Julie says this all the time, that a lot of the things that I learned through Shadow, because I always learn things. I've already learned a ton of things from you. I will then get the benefits from them later on, like weeks from now, some of the stuff will come back to me and give me some little nuggets of information to shape my thinking in a better way, which we're always trying to do to get better with dogs. So I benefit tremendously from Shadow Week by hearing other perspectives and people looking at what I do and saying, why are you doing that? I'm like, I didn't even know I was doing that kind of stuff. And then having to explain it, of course, that's the difficult part.
Right. It's cool. Like, I've never done shadows, like teaching people dog training, but essentially I teach people dog training all the time because I work with owners. And I feel a very similar way about go home sessions, that many times after a go home session, I talk a little too much by go home sessions. They're not as straight to the point as like Gabby's. Yeah. But besides that, I think it helps click for owners, like when I kind of talk and explain things in a way they can get it. But every time I have to explain something in a different way to get that new person to understand it, it helps me understand it a little bit more too, in an interesting way, because I'm talking it out with them, basically.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I feel like during my development, because I was talking to owners in their homes and stuff, and I had to explain what I had just learned and I had to find a way to get it, it helped me retain it and it helped me understand it deeper. And then you get somebody that maybe they don't understand what you're saying. You got to find a different angle to get it across. So teaching or just talking out loud to people and describing it will help it sink in.
Yeah.
And help it all connect. So it's like the knowledge for me, the way I have knowledge in my head, it's all connected. When I'm in a good, healthy space mentally and I'm on top of my game, all of my knowledge I can access and it's all connected. It's not like there's a little here and there's a little here. It's a web of knowledge and it makes a circle. And I can start a thought about something behaviorally and take it. And I can make a full circle. I know I'm probably losing a lot of people here, but when you study enough, and then if you study and then go and work with dogs and study and go and work with dogs 3, 6, 5 years, your brain picks up on so many things that you're not even aware of. And then what I do is I sit in a quiet place and I think and I connect things. And when I have a question, I write it down. This is for years. You know, I still do it now, but the questions are less and less. I used to have a question every second until I understood things in an encompassing way. You know what I mean? And every now and then I'll get stumped and be like, something about my knowledge isn't quite there. And that'll bother me. And I'll have to figure out the answer until I have everything connected again. And then I'm good. You know, right now I'm shifting a little bit. The way I view dogs, the way I train is shifting a little bit for the better. And I'm developing something new for myself and for the dogs that I can be more organic in my dog training. I can take a dog and give an organic experience from start to finish rather than a like, hey, right now we got to do play, so let's go.
Right.
We just have to. I like to train dogs where the conversation comes up. You know, so it, like living with them, and then the conversation will come up. You'll have to go to class eventually. You'll bark at the door eventually, and I'll talk to you about that. You'll try this or that, right? So living with me, they learn how to live with a human in a structured way, in a healthy way, what the rules are. I'm basically the model for what the owner is going to be, and they have to figure it out. They're an active participant in the training program. I'm not feeding them the answers. The program's already there. It's already laid out. They find out the rules as they go. And if they want to know anything about anything, just look at me and I'll give you direction. And you see it when the dogs get confused. I encourage them to look at me and I'll show you what to do in the situation. So I personally like to teach them with context. And in order to do that, kind of almost like, hey, let's wake up, let's go potty, let's get breakfast, let's go for a walk.
Right. It's like,
and then from there, there's conversations, recall comes up, heel comes up. So it's more organic and the dogs click quicker because they understand the context of how we're using the commands and what they mean, rather than teaching the skill and then going to try to show them how to use it in the real world. It's shown in the context that it's supposed to be, but I will control the intensity of distractions. But hey, we're going for a walk.
Right.
This is what we do on a walk.
It's basically there's pre-existing rules and routine and boundaries in this house. Yes. And now you, new dog, have come and joined this household for 2-3 weeks. And you have to follow the rules. And I don't necessarily need to sit down and teach you all the rules because the rules already exist.
They'll come up.
And you just have to fit into it. Right.
I love talking to you because you just take what I say and you say it. What takes me 2 minutes, you come out so clear. And I'm like, yes, that's it. Write that down, Russ. Yes.
Write it down. It's what I was thinking about it when, because you've over the past 2 days when you've been talking, you're talking a lot about I don't know, you had this nice way, nice words of saying it, but training, basically how you live with your dog is the training, right? Like when the conversation comes up.
Yes.
And it's very different than, not to knock anyone who has a facility, because that can definitely work too.
Oh,
but it's the difference in it that I see is in a facility, it's almost like the dog comes into some sort of, they come in and we create the program, right?
Yes.
And here's the program, as opposed to here where it's like, this is a house, and in this house there are rules, and this is how the rules are. And when you're in my house, you have to follow these rules. And then at the end of the program, all it is really is you tell the owner what the rules of your house were, so they should keep it in their house, and then it works because the dog knows
it. You got it. And then of course we have our system, right? We use e-collars and stuff, and I've taught about that. But that is it, because I have studied for so long and lived with dogs for so long that I wanted to design something that, well, I knew that I lived with dogs in a way that if everybody lived with them this way, they wouldn't have as much issues, right? The structure thing we talked about. So I just boiled it down to what every dog owner is going to need. They're going to need, listen, it's not that complicated, okay? Go down and get the dog out of the kennel, okay? What are we going to need to do? We're going to need to be able to go outside without it being a hassle, right? So you're going to need to learn how to go from A to B, and I can show you how to do that. And I'm going to show you how to get back to me when you're done pottying. I'm going to show you how to let me put on the leash. I'm talking every little thing. I'm going to show you how to eat your food. I'm going to show you how to walk. In the context of us walking, going for a walk together, it's me leading.
Right.
Right. I'll show you when it's your time to have free time. And then maybe we have some conversations out during that little adventure that were very beneficial. Let's come in now and I'll have you go on place while I make lunch. A very, home-like, they becomes my dog. You know, I'm responsible for getting them where they need to be. But by the end, they understand all the rules that are common in households all across America. And the commands that we use are just five, the basic commands. And it transfers really well because it's not difficult stuff. It's like, hey, when you're in the living room, go lay down in the bed.
Right.
Hey, when we're on the walk, don't pull. Hey, when I say come, come. Right. And then there's really not much more to it than that. Because then you can use this expectation of that you've built, and then you can start to bring it, which is an important part of our program, out to the world, out of the house. What happens when we get in the car? What's the rules of the car? And what happens when we get to the store? So they learn through the context of the situation. And that's how I like to do it.
Yeah, and the cool thing about a program like that is that, first off, it literally is just modeled off of household life, right?
Yes.
It's not anything else, and it's modeled off of basic, like, average families, how they live with their dogs if they were actually living their best life with their dogs,
yeah,
right?
Pretty much like so. Yeah.
But the cool thing of that is because it's such a simple program, but built into that is the structure that everyone likes to talk about, where, like, it's a very broad word that's thrown around so much
it
that
is.
Most owners, I think, have no idea what it even means. It's just like, put structure into your dog's life, and they're like, oh, that's really nice. So what is then? What now? Right?
Yes.
But in that structure that you create, which is basically everything you just said, all these rules and these boundaries, and just follow some basic five words that you're going to learn to understand. Within that, a lot of the issues that dogs are struggling with, besides for just not following directions, right? But like serious issues, they kind of fall to the wayside because there is no space for that within that bubble that you create.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly it. So we don't usually ever, I don't remember the last time I addressed counter surfing, you know, and that's usually on every
right.
complaint.
It's
or,
like the average
or tearing
thing.
Up. I don't think I've ever addressed a dog in my entire career, unless it was before board and trains, for tearing up furniture or anything like that. Because now the rule is in the living room, you go on that bed unless I've said otherwise. And if you're on that bed, you can't do any of that other stuff. And so, but then you know, there's a lot that goes into it. I know it sounds simple, and the philosophy is simple, and I like it that way. All right. It's just based off from it's very simple in my mind. It's very easy for me to access how this thing's working. But actually training the dog does take the way that anybody does it well, is going to take some experience,
right?
And it's going to take some patience. It's not going to be easy, all right? But the concepts are easier to understand, all right? And the dogs get them quick. But what we deal with here as well, this is why people send their dogs here, attitude. But I'd like to talk about structure first, because let's clear up structure. Let's let them know what we think structure is, because you're right. It's hard to define that one. I guess if you set someone's up, what's structure for your dog? We get some different answers. So I'll tell you my take on it, and you can tell me yours or vice versa. And then and then we'll get around to how to apply it, because that's the thing. You can know what it is and then how to apply it. and how to get your dog to actually listen. I think maybe it would be helpful, but why don't you
inform? Yeah, I think I think the basic structure, which is really like all that I would really ask a dog owner to implement, right, is really if there's any commands that are going to be involved in that, not even commands, I wouldn't even use commands. It would be create your dog when you're not supervising it and at nighttime, because I don't think you're supervising your dog when you're sleeping. So create your dog.
That's a really good one.
Right?
Yeah.
And when it's not created, it should either be laying down somewhere, give it a spot that it can know this is its spot. And we like to call it place, but you don't even have to do that, right? Like, you can simply just teach your dog that when you're eating, it goes onto a bed over there by simply putting a leash on it, putting it on the bed, putting a tie back, and it stays there, right? And so you're eliminating its freedom to do whatever it wants in the house, because clearly we know when you give dogs the freedom to do whatever they want in the house, they do whatever they want in the house.
That's exactly what they're doing, isn't it?
And then I think outside the house, just teach them to follow you on a walk. It doesn't have to be a heel. I mean, and obviously, ideally, a heel is the best thing. I agree. But teach your dog just to follow, because I think what that does for a dog's state of mind is massive. When a dog is allowed, just like in the house, when we give a dog the freedom to do whatever it wants, it does whatever it wants. On a walk, when we give a dog freedom to do whatever it wants, then it does what it wants, right? And generally, that's not fun for the owner, yeah. Right?
It's ultimately usually
not fun for the dog either. Yeah. And I think really, like, even just those three basic things, if every dog owner implemented that, that would be enough structure to eliminate a massive amount of behavioral issues across the board.
Place alone.
Yeah.
I mean, for the in-store door behavior, like good kennel.
And then there's other things you could add in always, right? There's always more, like wait nicely before you eat, wait nicely before you go outside. Right. But I think even that stuff is bonus. It's like simply crate your dog, eliminate its free roam, and have it walk nicely on a leash, and most dogs won't need dog trainers.
That's right. I get behind that.
And so that's what I look at as basic structure. And I think there always can be more built onto that. Like your program clearly builds more onto
that.
You can
get right? Most training. You programs. Can say like, well, we eat, you're going to go over. The dog will get the contacts. Right. It'll be a day that you won't have to put it on the placement because they'll see the signs of dinner coming and they'll get on. Right. So we've talked about patterns. We'll get there, I guess.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful explanation.
That's how I think of structure in general, because I don't think it should be complicated and I don't think there should be a lot to it. It should be simple. Live with your dog in a way that's going to eliminate the ability for it to have bad behaviors, as opposed to just being upset when it has bad behaviors and trying to stop it.
Yes. And then if you get frustrated because they go on for a while, you might interact with the dog in a way that's not going to be very clear communication at all.
Can you guys hear Riggin snoring?
Riggin a nap over there. That's pretty much it. So structure, if you think about it, we have it from, most of us have it all of our lives. But enforced structure, that's where it's really going to be at, right? Because you can tell a dog to do something doesn't mean they're going to do it, right? And I've had this conversation with people where I'm like, well, you need to apply structure. And then they're listening, their jaws drop, and this is great. I didn't know I could just put him on the bed. This is amazing. And then they get back to me like, he won't stay on the bed. Or he won't settle in the kennel or any of this stuff, right? So you know what the structure is, but now you can't enforce it. But you have to be able to enforce it. And so structure for me is this: you define a rule for the dog. Or let's talk about humans because everybody knows humans, right? Define a rule for the humans. We'll talk about the traffic thing again. Hey, follow the road signs when you're driving. Follow the speed limit. Buckle up. Here's all these rules. Everybody knows them. Teach them the consequences of the rules. They know what the consequences are, although they'll never really know the full consequences until they get pulled over. And then once they know the rules and they know the consequences, then you activate the system and you let the drivers go and you start pulling them over for not following the rules. And they get a mild consequence. And every time they get pulled over after that, it gets heavier, right? This keeps us in line. It keeps us safe. It works. This is done all throughout our life. This is done in school systems. Hey, the kid's got to wake up at 6. It's got to hit the bus, right? There's structure, because that's a rule. You got to get up at this time. And then you're going to school. And when you get to school, there's a bunch of rules. There's a bunch of things you have to do and partake in. And if you don't do it properly, there's consequences for it. But let's go to the house with a dog with no rules or anything, right? So why do it? That's why. If you can't get what I'm saying right now by connecting it, why it's going to help your kid. Because if we didn't have that in our lives, it would be the Wild West and we'd all just be doing whatever the hell we wanted. And it would be a much more dangerous place and much more stressful place. And our minds would also be a lot less balance because we'd be, life would be stressful. Somebody could come into my house and try to take everything. I don't know. So for your dog, you just come up with the rules in your house. And you have your own little, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll forget that word. You create rules in your house for your dog, and then you enforce them in a proper way. And you see a dog drop off all the bad behaviors that you complain about. If you put the list that we get usually goes on for quite a while. But if you just boil it down to these things that me and Rush are saying, you tell your dog what to do, and then you, we'll get to, I'm avoiding certain words. That's why I'm, because I don't want to get into it. I'll let you open it because it's your podcast. But I'm avoiding the word punishment because I wasn't sure if you wanted to come in at
No, I think I think that's the key part, right? So when I you said, what do you think of structure? And I kind of gave like a practical steps of what you can do to implement structure, right? But the key thing to any rules, which is really the way you looked at it, and it's the same thing, but the key thing to rules is enforcement of rules, right?
Yeah.
Rules that aren't enforced are just like nice suggestions. Yeah.
That's right.
And the end of the day, enforcement of rules only happens through punishment, through a consequence for not following the rule, which we call punishment in English, right?
Because you could do a reward, but if you think about it in the traffic thing again, the reason I use traffic is most everybody drives. If it was, hey, follow the rules, drive the speed limit, and you'll get a reward, but no punishment, I think more people would speed.
Yeah, well,
because they'd be like, well, you know, I've already got
along that example, because I also use it with all my clients.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, and it makes so much sense. The reward for following the rules on the highway is you get to drive on this highway.
Right? That's a good way to put it.
Because if you don't follow the rules, you no longer get to drive on that highway. Eventually, you get one ticket, another one's points on your license, and you lose your license, right? That's the system. And that's literally life with your dog. Here's the rules. Follow the rules. Now, we're not throwing our dogs out of the house because they get off of place, but we're going to prevent them from ever getting to the point where we resent them enough, right? By just enforcing these rules.
Or they get taken from you because they hurt do somebody. Bad things outside the house. So either way, they won't be able to drive on the highway.
And when it comes to rewarding a dog, this is the part that I think I find a lot of owners struggle with. It's like, well, my dog's on place. Why shouldn't I reward him? Right. And it's because he's already learned to do it. And now the reward is his entire life. He lives in an awesome home. He has heating. He has a comfortable bed. He has food. He has you. He has walks. He has playtime. Right. These are things that dogs all across the world don't have. Tons of them. Right. And I think that I don't mean to not reward a dog, obviously, but life for this dog is rewarding as hell. All we're saying is follow our basic rules because we gave you this awesome life. Just like your highway example, right? You can drive on the highway, and that is a privilege because many people can't. And all you need to do is just don't follow, be an asshole on the highway, right? Follow these rules.
We're getting back to the structure is like how to get your dog to follow is that you have to find a way to implement consequences that work,
right?
Punishment that works, and the same way
they
figured it out on the highway.
It's not a bad word here.
I didn't know if you wanted to introduce it because of that, but anyway, punishment is it's the easiest way to say it because that's the actual definition, and everybody knows what it means. So basically, if your dog doesn't follow the structure of the day that you put in, for me here, if the dog's new, they don't know. So there's a bit of showing them what I want, again, teaching what the rule is. But as soon as I'm met with, once they know it, then they're breaking, absolutely, there's a punisher, and of course they don't break it anymore because it's done properly. Just like if you got pulled over the day before and you're driving the same route, you're going to slow down right where you got pulled over. You might even do it without even thinking about it, right? Because it's fresh in your mind. So it works, and you need to learn how to use it. And a program like this gives it to you. It does the work for you, and then your dog has experience with all this stuff, and all you have to do is keep it going. You don't have to develop it. Developing it is difficult, and getting it to the level of like a professional like myself, you would have to put a lot of effort and energy into doing it. I would think if you were sitting at home watching this right now and you wanted the dogs to turn out the way they do at programs like this, I don't know how possible it would be without at least a year or more study and practice.
But don't you think that there's a way that the average owner could live with their dog?
Oh, absolutely.
Just works, right?
Absolutely. Without
the fancy stuff, not an off-leash heel and all of that. Just live. And that's what I think structure is, right? Because a lot of the extras that training programs offer, right? Like an off-leash recall and off-leash heels and like the fancy stuff, right?
Let me tell you how I think about it. I mean to cut you off, but I really want everyone to know here. It's not fancy and it's not extra. It's this for the off-leash stuff. I'm standing here and my dog's over there and I go, boom, and now the animal's in front of me. That is, if you have an animal that you don't fully understand and fully can communicate with you, being able to make one sound and knowing without a doubt that animal is going to end up at your feet is priceless. That to me is foundational to be able to, if I'm going to live with any animal, be it a dog, right, tiger, cat, if I'm not going to do it with a cat, we all know that. I want to make sure that I can make a sound. If I could only make three sounds, if I had to choose three sounds, it would be a sound that means I like that, a sound that means I don't like that, and a sound that means come here. Oh, and one more, please. And a sound that means stay here. That's what I need. I need a sound. Animal, get here. Okay. Animal, stay here. We can go anywhere together, right? Because you'll come to me and you'll stay here. I need those. I also need to be able to say, I like that and I don't like that. That's really all I need. Everything else on top of that. I don't think recall is fancy. Like whether it's a beep or if it's long distance or whatever, I think it's essential. Your dog needs to, without a doubt, it needs to be within the top three priorities of what you teach your dog. That recall has to be there. Get your dog to learn how to come to you. Get your dog to learn how to stay in the proper fashion with a nice, calm mind, and you can do anything. You don't need place or anything. Your dog will lay down when he's tired. But we've made changes to make it convenient. There's a place bed for a reason. It's convenient for the dog and the owner. But so our program is this. Come. That's the first one. And then we have three stay commands. Sit, down, or place. And we use them differently. We use sit for quick stays, you know, like sit, I'm going to check the mailbox. Sit, I'm going to open the door. Or down, you're going to be there a little longer, but not too long. Not like 3 hours, but you're going to be there a little longer. Maybe we're eating lunch. Place, you're going to be there a while, right? And this is the way, so we got three stay commands, a recall, and then literally heal, which is just an extension of the recall. Just keep following me. Keep following me. If I keep moving, you keep recalling. And if you simplify it like that, it becomes real easy to teach now. Because now if I teach a sit stay, I've already got the concept of stay. If I get a recall, I've already got that. That's over half of my program. If I turn that recall into a follow, like you said, is important, that's 75% of the program, right? I mean, you know what I mean? So if you're going to teach anything, get your dog to come to you, get your dog to stay, right? Because then you can get it on a place bed. Then you can get it over to this corner of the room. You can get over to that corner of the room. And then also be able to tell your dog, I don't like that, and I do like that, and be able to give a consequence for the things that you don't like that matters to the dog. And you're going to be fine. You don't need to see me or him or anybody if you don't want to. You'll exist with your dog just fine. It doesn't have to be complicated, right?
Yeah, and I what I meant by the extra stuff, though, is behaviorally, meaning like when it comes to, and I don't mean behaviors like a behavior the dog can do when you tell them to it. I mean like behaviorally, meaning behavioral issues, mindset, that type of stuff. Yes. All of that, an average owner can not necessarily solve it because once they're there, it's a lot harder.
Yes,
but can definitely prevent it through structure, through having rules, routine, and obviously an enforcement of those rules.
Yes,
right, and that's the part where most owners struggle in the big, like in general, isn't really like how do I get my dog to lay down. It's more how do I get my dog to be calm.
Yeah, or right? how do I get my dog to lay down when he doesn't want to.
Right.
So most people get their dogs. Most dogs come here and they know sit and they know down. Some of them even know play. Some of them even know recall because it's not that complicated to teach a dog. But what's complicated for what seems to be, yeah, I guess, is to hold them accountable in an effective way that's humane and effective and clean. It's not, you're not like, you know, dirty in your house, correcting your dog, chasing him around, you know. We got it down to here. We use the e-collar for the punisher. So you don't need any other punisher. You just have that tool for your punisher, but there's downsides to that. And the downside is when that collar's off, because when you come here, you're buying an e-collar program. So when the collar's off, the program's off. And so if we talk about that for a second, where you take that program off, now what? Well, now you got to be able to correct without the collar. Cause all the collar is your way of correcting it's your dog's way of being punished, and they understand it and they accept it and they know that that's you, and it makes it easy to punish. You click a button and you change the intensity. You don't have to do it with your hand. You don't have to do it with something over the snout. You don't have to do it with a leash or anything. So it's nice and convenient. But we will go down the rabbit hole of saying, is there a difference in the way the dog respects you if you correct them on an e-collar versus if you do it yourself? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
If you do it yourself, if you're just the type of person that knows how to do it, if you learned, usually the reason why you know how to do it is because you've seen it somewhere, you've had it done on you or something, you've been disciplined, you understand how to discipline another thing. That usually helps. If you have no clue, I would recommend watching people that do. And don't let me get off track here. I told you about that. Where was I going with this? With
the idea of punishing a dog via an e-collar tool or from yourself.
And you're going to find that there could be a difference, especially with dogs who are more difficult because they look at that social hierarchy and they some of them want to know from you as the animal. They need to know from you as the animal that you're going to be able to take care of business. And once they do, they'll leave it be. But if that's an unsolved mystery, or if you never went down that, had that conversation with the dog to let them know, I can back myself up and I don't need the e-collar, then you'll never know what those benefits are. And that's not something I teach here. That's something I do with my personal dogs. My dogs get corrections from me. They're like my little children, right? Like my kid, I will discipline my kid and I'll discipline my dogs like that, but I'm not going to discipline someone else's dog like that. For them, they get the e-collar program.
Right, and that's ultimately, I think, why the e-collar should be used. I was thinking about this today. It was like I kind of said it in the car when I was driving with the girls from the program. I think ultimately the best way to train is without tools. But not so everyone thinks I'm anti-tools. Right. Not that everyone thinks I'm anti-tools. What I mean by that is tools are very important, but if every dog owner learned how to was able to bring themselves to discipline their dog from day one when that dog comes home without needing something in between them and the dog, meaning an e-collar, then they wouldn't be necessary for most dogs.
Right.
Because the respect would be there right away. And
be a convenience.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be used. I mean, like for an off-leash far recall, I think e-collars are a great way to go about it and have a safety backup because it's very hard to chase a dog down and discipline them for not coming.
Can't be done, folks.
It could.
It can be.
But deeper than like the dog not listening to you for coming is the dog knowing that you have the capability to discipline it. And that's the part that most owners don't and won't do. And that's why tools come into play. Yes. And that's why they're such an important part of training, because ultimately the whole idea of, I think, pet dog training really is help dogs and their owners live a better and easier life with each other. Yeah. And if that means that they have a little handheld thing that they press a button so that they don't have to poke their dog or whatever it is that they would do to discipline a dog, then so be it, right? Then that's awesome.
And even if they don't have a moral issue with it.
Right.
Right? Like say they don't have a moral issue. Like I don't have a moral issue with discipline. It's just that I'm too damn busy because I live in America and they're really busy. Dude, I have learned a lot in the past few years about how busy people are and how little time they actually have for their pets. And I know that's a whole nother conversation of whether or not those people should have pets and all that. I am a professional dog trainer. I'm not going to get into that. Those are my clients, the people who don't have time to train their dogs, the people who they want to be able to do it, but they got three kids, a job, a full-time career, both parents, all the school events with the kids. And now the dog is like, they literally don't have the time in the first place for it, but they already have it. Right. And that's like, that's 90% of my clientele. They have the dog, but don't have time to raise it properly and teach it all this stuff. So the common thing nowadays is to get the dog and sign it up for a board and train program. Usually that's what people are doing these days. They send them off to school and have the dogs learn at a program like ours,
right.
which is cool. But they do learn, they do miss the bonding experience that you get with your dog and all the relationship, elements, the way that the benefits that you get through the dynamics of your relationship through training a dog, you don't get. You paid somebody else to do that for you. So you don't get it. It's like having your kid, you want your kid to be to grow up to be a decent, let's say it's struggling with some stuff and you wanted to get it over it because you wanted to move on past this. You sent it somewhere to get it dealt with. You weren't involved in the process of helping the kid through or the dog through. And therefore you don't have all that extra benefits of the dynamics and the way that the dog looks at you. So they don't respect you nearly as much as the trainer as they go home. Everybody knows this. They treat the trainer much different because that trainer went through all that with them. and you didn't. So you can't expect for them to just give you respect because they're coming home from a program like this. The way you get respect is you use this program and just same way I did, and you will get the same respect as I did. But you're not buying your dog's respect. You are buying a way to give your dog a harmonious lifestyle will result in respect and trust and all this good stuff. And if you implement it, you'll be good. But a lot of people leave here and they think the dog's going to be a certain way because of what we did, the work we did here. But a lot of this, the dogs know where they are. They know what company they're in. And if they're around people that let them get away with things in the past, they're going to at least try it. So the way we look at it is as soon as the dogs leave here, the program goes with them. And then every dog changes within, not too long going home.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that from my experience working with clients and dogs, and it's not as much as yours, but I think that the program goes with them so far as the owners enforce it only.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say. That's why you're here.
well, because it's an important thing for owners to realize that the program doesn't go anywhere. The program actually ends right away, and it only continues when you get back home if immediately there's enforcement. Because associations are so strong, right? Because associations are so strong, right? So a dog comes here and the only thing they associate with these walls and with you and dogs and everything going on here is rules and boundaries and respect and enforcement of rules. Sir. And obviously there's fun. Like the dogs do have fun here. I see them. But even within that, there's context of rules and accountability.
Yes.
And that's what they associate with this. That's why when a dog comes back for boarding, like Julie was saying, they go right back to where their crate was, right? Or they go to their place bed, right?
Yes.
Because they just immediately, they're like, I'm here. This is how things go here. So on the other end of it, when the dog goes back home, the dog is like, ooh, I'm home. This is what I do here.
Yes,
let
me
go jump on the counter and eat what I want and do whatever I want, right?
Yeah.
And that's when the program like really either starts or ends.
That's right.
And then it starts and ends with the owner's willingness to enforce these new rules. And that's the part that has to be drilled home the most to most average owners who send their dog away to a board and train, right? Board and trains are great because it kind of takes care of everything.
Yes.
But it's not a fix it. Your dog is far from fixed.
That's right.
It's just like now it knows something else that you can now, as the owner, associate it with this house, right? Yeah. You can now take these new things the dog's learned and say, it also works here, and now it's your job to create those new associations through enforcement.
That's it. And how do we do that? Well, we do have ways to do it, actually. One example is as soon as the dog gets in the car from leaving here, we have them hold them accountable for a downstay. This is why we use our commands to tell our dog to do something so that we can address our dog's attitude. So the dog's just, do the dog have to be in a down in the back seat? Is it going to kill it? No, not at all. But if we tell it to go in a down and doesn't want to, we get to address that attitude so that it goes away. Because if that attitude goes away, guess what? That attitude is not just for that down in the car. It has nothing to do with that. The attitude is, I don't want to do this, the thing that you told me. And that's not a follower, okay? That's the thing that your dog, so we tell them as soon as they get the dog in the car, downstay, okay? You got the downstay, you're holding them accountable. So that's the first message home to the dog. And then they get into the house and they do plays. Set the dog up to make a mistake. Knock on the door. The dog gets off place. Correction on the e-collar. Here's the beauty of this. Everybody listen. The same correction, the same sensation that dog's been getting here is the same one that the owners go home with. They tap. They're using the same tool that I use. They have the same ability as I do. They don't have to rely on their skills of leash popping and touching a dog. So it's so consistent. You watch that dog get corrected and have the association that I created take over. If you do it the way we tell you to, which you would learn if you went through the program. If you do it, and we see it dog after dog after dog after dog, it works. We crack some code here to get the dog to respect your living room and you. Within each command, once you start correcting, if you do, like Russ said, if you do correct, see, that's the thing. It doesn't work if you don't correct, obviously. If cops just stop pulling people over for 2 months, things would go bad, right? I'm hoping this is obvious. If it's not obvious to you, you might want to question, do I want a dog or do I want a goldfish? Because the goldfish might be safer. Because you can't understand what these simple things is. You're going to struggle with the dog to the point where it's not fair for the dog. So, all right, let's not be selfish and get dogs before we know anything about dogs. Let's learn a little bit about the animal, the species, and then, of course, the breed that we want. And let's educate ourselves before we go and get a dog. That's going to help a lot, too. again, another tangent, and back to Russ to put us back on track.
The tangents are where the good stuff
comes
out.
Where are we going with this? Where do we start?
Association. Awesome. The power of association. When a dog goes back home, they associate everything with that owner and that home. And it's so strong. When I do go-home sessions, so my go-home sessions look different than yours because I do them in a client's home. So automatically everything is different, right?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Like literally we see the power of association as soon as I pull up by their house. The dog is
on
like,
the street
tail
sometimes.
Starts going and it knows. Yeah, it's really amazing to see how a dog, like it's not a memory thing. It's they associate that block with certain things, right? And as soon as we'll turn onto a block, even they're in the down in the back of the car and I hear their tail going. I just hear the tail
how
going.
How do they know, though? Right? They always know when they're on
their associate whether like their senses are so different than ours. I don't know if it's they're smelling something.
I've always had trouble
something.
Because if they're in a down and I've had dogs in a down that can't see anything.
Yeah.
They
but they know, right?
They can't
still
see
do
it.
That.
How can they smell it, right? But they know.
Yeah, they know. Yeah. And but what I was getting at, so
sorry.
So go home sessions in a client's home, right? The association is seen. And every client that I speak to, I learned this the hard way. I tell them your dog's gonna look untrained when we come home. And it's because of your home, not because of the training. Like watch the videos, you'll see your dog was trained, and now let's make it work in your house, right?
Yes.
And I try to always bring it up though when they see their dog acting out in the home, right? And then obviously we address it and then we work through it. But when they see that, it's like, I want you to understand how powerful this is, that the dog just went through an intense training program, learned a whole new way of life, was successful with it because you've seen on the videos that it worked, right? I'm not using a fake dog for these videos. You've seen your dog on it, but yet still when it comes back home, it's going to act the way it did 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
On the other end of that, because you can now clearly see visually how powerful these associations are, start to use that power to do the exact opposite of what the dog's doing now and create new associations. And the cool thing is, like, I've done a massive part of the work for you because to create those new associations, like you said, is fairly easy. Just use the same language I used and the dog is going to very quickly see that there's something new to be associated with this person, with this house, with this street.
And it happens very fast because while they're here, we do a lot of contextual stuff. So like while you're on the bed, when you feel a stim, it means to go into a double down and relax. That little trick right there solves, it doesn't only correct them for making the mistake of leaving the command or making an error on the command. It tells them to take your mind and relax here too. And it doesn't take, the way you explained it was beautiful, by the way. I'm glad this is on video. It was very beautiful. It was very accurate in the way that I think as well. But I would like everyone to know it doesn't take that long anymore because they already know everything. When they came here, they had a chance their association because listen, they still barked at my door most of the time when I knocked on it to set them up. So the knocking thing is a great easy example of an association.
Right.
Right. A dog who has an association to bark and rush the door. All I have to do here is go knock, knock, knock. And the dogs are already reacting to it. Bark, rush, or at the very least intense interest in it. And then I can go wrong response. The response with the e-collar correction. Nope. Wrong response. Then the dog, the second time I do it, they hesitate because they had just been corrected for the bark. And that hesitation gets rewarded. I say, good, because you didn't bark and you relaxed. So the e-collar was involved in changing the association because that was the sensation, that was the tool that changed the association. And we're doing it every day because once they get it here, we go downtown and all this stuff. It literally takes one very believable experience, generally, typically. And you've done 90% of the lifting, but it has to happen as soon as you get home. You can't wait till the next day. You can't wait a week from now. As soon as they get back home from the day they left this program, you walk right in, you do what we tell you to do while you're here. And everybody who comes here knows what we tell them to do. And you will be one of those clients that have instant massive turnaround in your house without having to work on all. You're not going to see all the other stuff because they just left here. They just got the correction at your house in your living room because you set it up for leaving the bed. You watch that dog sit there and lay on that bed for a couple hours in Julie's Canine Academy state of mind. And they carry it there. And you got it done in your living room, which is where your dog probably is 50% of its life.
And punishment, like it's such a misunderstood thing. It's the reality is that it's the only thing that makes you believable.
Well, you can't expect another living thing to listen to you unless you're doing one of two things, giving it something it wants or telling it, I'll do this thing that you want to avoid.
Right.
And it's one or the other.
The thing is, like, if you tell, obviously we're talking in the context of dogs, right? So if you tell a dog not to do something, right, and then you like try to act like you're serious about it, not doing something,
yeah,
right? But you don't actually show that you're serious about it, not doing something, which the only way to really show that is through consequence, punishment, whatever word makes you feel good, but through delivering some sort of punishment to the dog, then it has no reason to believe you that,
has
you
no meaning.
That actually matters.
Yeah, there's nothing to it. There's no substance to your words. And so let's go.
I think that carries over so much bigger than just that one thing, right? Like, let's say like something simple. Stop a dog from, you used the example of knocking on like the door, right?
Yeah, it's a good one.
It carries over so much bigger than just don't bark at the door. It carries over to this person actually is serious about what he says.
Yes.
This person is someone that is believable when they say don't do this or else, which we're not trying to like hold something over our dog's head and say or else, but at the same time, that's how you have a real life accountability, is when there is that or else.
And here's the thing, guys, what you just said was, it can't be said better than that, because that's how they associate you with when you were around. They're not going to just be acting however they want. They're going to look at you and see how should I be acting,
right,
according to how you like me to behave. And the thing is you don't have to go through every single bad behavior, which you try to say before. Once you get the dynamic of the relationship, right, where they say, I'm just going to stay back here and listen to what you say, then then if you're the reason why they're listening to you, as long as you're with them, they're going to listen to you, right? So you can go anywhere. You can go outside the house. If you have a certain level of respect, this dog's going to listen to you in any situation. It doesn't matter what the outside influences are. Of course, within reason, right? Of course, if there's a life-threatening situation, training goes out the window.
Right.
But within the context of every day, what we do with our dogs, that dog, if they respect you, that's why you hear people say, this dog listens to this person, and this person can do its nails, and this person can bring it to the store, and this person...
It's not because
it's the relationship
he loves you
that
more.
Gets you, right? But why? What is the relationship? Past experiences, I have physically corrected you, so you know that I'm willing to do that, so you listen to me. That's all it is, guys. It's that simple. If you're struggling with your dog, it is that simple, but it's not that simple. And that's why we're going to stop right there. It's not that simple, because you have to know what you're doing to do proper punishment, not just willy-nilly by the seat of my pants punishment. Know what you're doing. And if you don't know how to punish, learn how to punish. You need to learn how to punish your dog properly, so you're not over here taking guesses at something so serious as punishment. If you're going to punish dogs, you learn a technique that, and you know, they're not that difficult.
Yeah, proper punishment really boils down to, again, simply, but it's not simple. And I get why you're saying that, right?
You don't, know why I'm saying
don't
that.
Just like finish watching this and go punch
That's
your dog
right.
for doing something.
Don't,
right?
Don't go punch your dog until you study how to do it. Okay.
Right. But at the same time, like what it breaks down to is pretty simple if we think about it in human terms, right? Like, let's go back to your speeding on the highway example. Why does it work? Because you know why you got pulled over, right? Because
yes,
what's the first thing the officer says? You know why I pulled you over, right?
Yes, sir.
Right? And you're like, yep, I was speeding, yes. Right? And that's why you get your ticket. And then on the ticket, it says, like, it's, I don't know the official words, but the words is basically, this is your consequence because you were speeding.
It's
right?
That simple.
Right. Yeah. Now, in dog language, we can't do that. We're not going to write them out a ticket, right?
No.
But if we are able to connect the reason why they're getting that punishment
with the
to the punishment, that's all that it takes to really
and
punish.
And if it's consistent,
which,
it goes away.
Right. And that's, I guess that's marker words, right? And that's timing, and that's proper punishment, really. But it's just making sure the dog understands why it's happening.
That is the biggest. That's the big one. I'm glad you brought that up. That's the big one. Because if you punish in a confusing way, first of all, if you're going to be punishing dogs, you need to know more about, you need to be, I don't want to say know more, like you have to go read more books or something. It's best if you're going to be punishing dogs as a professional. It doesn't mean you're going to be doing it regularly. You need to be really, really, really good with dogs.
Professional punisher.
You need to be good with dogs, because you got to be able to read one. You can't just, listen, we don't just punish dogs for no reason here. And we're not just doing it like, I think he's misbehaving. There's a way, there's only certain things that we punish, okay? And there's not many. And the dogs learn it. And if they're confused and I'm applying punishment and they don't know why it's happening, this is a big problem. This creates a, can I use the nasty words? Those crates shut down dogs. That's a big bad word. That's the thing about a shutdown dog.
Like, waiting, what's this dogs nasty who are word shut down? Say?
Yeah, well, I like that that word. You know, that shut. It's common to use when you're saying that if you think dogs being disciplined right. unjustly, you say shut down. To me, shut down is a dog who doesn't understand where the consequence, like why the consequence is happening. They're not operant to the fact that they know that their behavior caused the punisher. Where the punisher's coming from, if it's an e-collar, you haven't explained it, you get massive confusion and shutdown, and that gives e-collars a bad name. But guess what? It doesn't have to be that way. You can actually teach the dog all about the e-collar, what the stim means, and all sorts of stuff, as you're seeing what we do here. Although I can't sit down and talk to the dog, though, so I have to do it through experiences. And what do experiences create? Associations. Right. And what's it all about? Associations. So I'm very much about associations, very much about creating organic experiences to teach a dog a lesson, right? A lesson, not like I'm going to teach you a lesson, big guy, but learn more about life and how this thing works, right? Yeah. When you're living with the modern day human in a modern day world, there's certain things you need to know, okay? And one of them is when the doors open, don't rush out. Little things like that. And back to Russ to keep us on track. There's I realized that I was going into
tangent mode.
Tangent. And you said, you know what he said? I said, don't let me go into tangents. He's like, oh, I'm letting you go.
Yeah, I was like, I'm definitely letting a couple of tangents happen.
I, you know, because the next thing I'm talking about aliens.
Because that's where I'm trying to get you to.
Because somehow all of my, it'll just go from dogs and it'll eventually just get to like all that.
Everything, if we stay long enough, eventually we hear all about Josh's alien theories.
Against the universe and all that stuff.
I think that what I like a lot about watching your training the past couple of days is that it's through experience, right? So you create that new association right away. And then I'm obviously not going to be here for any of the dog's full program, but what it seems to me is you create this new association and then you use it every day, which repatterns the dog's mind, right? Yes. And I think those are like the two real parts of what dog training boils down to, right? Yes. Association, yes, and then buddy. Patterns.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
So you create a new association and then you pattern it into the dog's life over and over and over, and then it becomes who the dog is, right? And essentially that's how all behavioral issues are caused too, right? Because back to your knocking on the door example, what the average dog knocks on the door because there's this scary guy coming with a brown uniform from a brown truck with a big box, right? And he comes up to the porch and he throws his box at the door. And like the dog is like, I got to get that guy away. So he barks. Yeah. And then what happens? The guy goes away. So the dog's like, fuck yeah, that worked, right? Yes. I just guarded my house. And then it happens the next day. So those, it's my job. I got to go, right? He guards the house, right? And over until all the dog associates. Why do you think people are like, my dog is scared of uniforms? He's not scared of the uniform. He associates that uniform with the bad guy who comes to the house, right? Right. And that's through exactly daily right. patterns of this happening.
And what if this guy all of a sudden, he kept coming to the house, but he just stopped. Instead of dropping boxes off, he came in and gave the dogs, if it was possible, right? Play with their imagination. It was some type of rewarding thing. Right. Like the dog would slowly change from defensive mode to excited mode, right? Dissociation can change it that easy. You're thinking like that easy? Yeah, that easy. And that's what we do here. We change associations every day, all day long. That's all we're doing. But then once the dog gets it, then we have to go out into the real world and be like, hey, also, and I do want to get into disengaging from the environment eventually. Yeah. This is a big part of our program. It's huge. It's the reason why we can bring our dogs anywhere once they're to the point they need to be. And I don't have to teach them new skills or how to behave in this particular situation if I use one of the commands. Because within the stay commands, there's a set of rules the dog gets. And you can see that how we do it here. And you can also see that they get it. And it's this. If you're in a down, let's say, we use down a lot, or place. I want you to disengage with the environment if I tell you to, because you're having a hard time. The dog's unreliable because it's too worried about whatever it is out in the environment. It could be a dog, a squirrel, people. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter. All it matters is your dog is interested in it. We can, part of the down command, the double down that we use means I want you to disengage with anything that's going on and just focus on laying there and relaxing until I release you. That is a special part of this program, because now our owners can go out to like a restaurant and say the dog's in a down, it's doing good, but it looks like it's heading towards unreliable here. Like it might break us down, but it's not going to break us down. Let's just stop fussing with that, because that's going to create a dog who's unreliable. We're going to correct that because that's already against the rules of Down. You're not supposed to be heavily involved in the environment. You're supposed to be passively watching. That's our stay command. Sit, place, down, passive. And if you have trouble with that, use the double down. And what this does, it doesn't matter if you're here in West Virginia or if you're anywhere in the United States or if you go to any other country, a down is a down and these are the rules in the down. So no matter what's going on in the environment, no matter how bad you want it, you know to disengage. And each dog has practice with that. And you can see them even turn their head away from the thing that's distracting them. And this is something that I don't see in a lot of places at all, you know, and this is super useful. It doesn't have to be a double down, but the idea that the dog knows to disengage with the environment is huge. I didn't know this was possible until we stumbled across it. And I can tap on a collar and have a dog disengage with the environment and focus on their down and focus on relaxing. Eventually, I don't have to do this with this dog because this dog learns how to sit up or even if they're in the down and watch the world, but not interact with it. Just watch it passively. And then if I say break, here's the thing. If we release them, that means now you can interact with the environment. So don't interact with the environment. Now you can interact with the environment. That's huge. Some people call that an on and off switch, but it's a little different. It's a little different because the context, when I'm using it in context, I'm teaching dogs, I believe they understand that I want you to go into calm and ignoring. So you'll see if they're focused on a dog or something or a squirrel, if they feel that correction, they'll know, okay, don't pay attention to that. And they'll settle down. And oftentimes they don't even look at it and they wait. That's huge. And that's not even icing on the cake. That's, to me, is essential. If you can look at your dog and say, hey, don't worry about anything that's going on here. Just relax. And you can do that anywhere. Then you can bring them anywhere. Right.
And I think, so being passive about the world, right? Watching the world in a passive way versus a reactive or engaging way. What I found with the dogs that I've worked with that have, let's say, anxiety issues or fear issues, what anxiety and fear is caused by is like the what if of everything, right?
Yes.
And they're concerned of everything. And I think a big part of it, even with the hyperactive dogs, I guess this is what I'm going to say is probably true too, is they never had the ability to process the world because they're always actively either running away from it,
yes, sir,
running towards it, or just in their head, completely like confused about it, right? Nervous about it. And by saying you can watch, right? But you don't have to be actively involved, just be passive about it. The dog actually gets to process. So now a dog that was afraid of the truck and is now instead sitting and passively watching the truck realizes that there was no reason for the fear of the truck.
You got it, buddy.
Right? And that's, to me, the power that I've seen time and time again of teaching a dog to, I like to use the word passive of it, because it's not that we don't want you to like be a part of the world.
Yes.
It's just be passive to it.
That's
right. Like just be a bystander and watch.
Yes.
And that's the part I think a lot of people confuse about that
absolutely
style of training.
That's why
also,
I wanted to bring it up.
Right. You're not telling a dog, like, just shut up and look in the corner. It's
that's
like,
right.
No, be a part of what's going on, but in a polite way, just like the same way as how, like, you don't run into the middle of the street just because you love Porsches and one drove by.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
And
right.
when it comes to fear, let's say, which is a big one for these things, but really, I guess any of them, hyperactive dogs, fear, anxiety, most
dominant
of those dogs never process the world in a healthy way. And that's why they have all that craziness. So like a hyperactive dog sees the truck and is like, oh, it's a truck. And they get all excited, right? And a fearful dog is like, oh, shit, it's a truck. And the anxious dog is like, it's a truck. I don't know what trucks do. That's so crazy.
All being influenced by this thing. And
right.
I'd rather them not be.
Right.
I'd rather than look at it and see what it does.
Okay.
And you made a great point with, like, if we have dogs who are fearful all the time. This is a rehab tool.
Right.
It really, but we use it with every dog because it helps prevent these things from coming up by being able to teach the dog to go into this passive mode. Some people call it the calm state of mind. You know, that if you were watching the old dog whispering stuff, I think that would be the terminology that's closest related to what I see in this state of mind. It's very passive, it's very calm, and it's very much disengaged. But what's funny is as soon as you're like, hey, break, go ahead, boom, it's just like, oh, playtime, like let me go be a dog in this environment. Now you gotta let your dog be a dog, but there's gonna be those times, like, say you got guests coming, there's a practical one, go lay over there and relax. You know, the passiveness of watching the guests coming without actually yearning to go interact, being okay with just watching. That's what we're teaching the dogs. You know what I mean? And it really, it's, powerful stuff. It gives them coping skill to get through anxiety, to get through fear, to get through, right there, anxiety and fear is most of it.
Yeah.
Right there, it's huge. But also,
but even impulse, the happy-go-lucky, hyperactive ones.
Yes, which they get anxious because they're so, it's the anticipatory anxiety, the anticipation of something happening. I can't wait for it to happen. It's Christmas morning, the ball, right? I'm up all night thinking about it because it's Christmas morning. The dogs are experiencing that type of anxiety. That goes away too. And the cool thing is about this, like, if you want to call it state of mind training, is that we can correct the improper mindset, and the dogs get it. Dogs aren't confused by it. So dogs are confused by it. I want to have a career right now, I think, because this is how I know how to change a dog association. I say, hey, I want you to learn how to go into the state of mind where you're passive. You got it? Okay, you got it. Cool. And then I'm going to put you in a situation which you previously go into a bad, unhealthy state of mind. And I'm going to correct that, saying I don't like it, and then reset you into that calm state of mind and rinse and repeat until you're starting to self-regulate. You're starting to go into your old one and then go calm because you know that's what I want. So you're self-regulating. That's the process. You self-regulate for a little while until that calmness is your new association. There's no more, you don't have to self-regulate. This is your new association. But in the middle, there's that back and forth. You're seeing the dog kind of fight it and self-regulate, meaning that dog's starting to trigger, but then stops itself without me intervening. This can get achieved like that. A dog who struggled with something for 10 years, you can achieve a dog self-regulating if you do it right like this in a session. That doesn't mean the dog is already changed though. He needs time, like you said, going home to repattern a new association. So the old one's going to come up, and then correction. This is the same way it happens at home, that you do it when you go home, is the same way that I taught it originally, right? So that's why it works so quick. They're used to the process. They get experience with a process that happens faster. So how long it took me, it's going to be quicker maybe, not necessarily for them, but because it's the house and it's a stronger association, but right. They understand the process. The only thing you're going to run into is if they don't want to listen to you and you're not willing to correct them with a firm enough correction to get them to actually say fine.
Yeah, the way that you and Julie explain it that I appreciate a lot is being okay with disagreeing with your dog, right?
Yes.
Because that's really what it is. It's like your dog is having an argument with you.
Yes.
You're saying like, I really want you to go lay down. And the dog's like, well, I really don't want to. And you're having an argument over it. And if you're like, you know what? You're right. You really don't have to. Then that's it. It's over. But you have to have a way of letting your dog know and being okay with disagreeing with it and showing your dog that you disagree in a real way that matters, not just like, oh, I want you to
the way that dogs show each other
in a way that it matters to a dog. Yeah. And not that just matters to us. Like we can sit down and argue on an idea. A dog can't, he has to just know you don't want that
by showing.
Right.
And so that's why we talk about having conversations with the dog, especially those conversations of you don't want to do this, or you're doing this thing I don't want you to do. And I don't want you to do it. And you want to do it. Or I want you to do it and you don't want to do it. Right. Those are the two conversations that people send their dog here for. The dog doesn't, they want their dog to listen when the dog doesn't want to, or they want the dog to stop doing something they don't want the dog to do. So this is focused around those conversations. And here's the thing. If I tell a dog, my relationship with the dog is the first thing is I don't want you to go out that door, and they go out the door and they get corrected and we repeat until they're not going out the door. The dog is, after a couple experiences of me disagreeing and then the dog listening to what I say, I don't have to then go through that whole process necessarily with every new experience. It's just, when I say something, they just start listening. You understand?
Right, because this is somebody who...
That's right.
Who doesn't get disagreed with, guys. Right? This is somebody who I can't argue with. I never wouldn't argue with
Mitch. It just doesn't work with this guy.
Point. Right.
There's no point. And but the thing is, if you're inconsistent, this is why everybody's like, consistency is so important, because it is. Because if you go and have these conversations with the dog, like, hey, I don't want you to do X, Y, and Z, whatever it is, and sometimes you fall through with it and sometimes you don't, the dog being a gambler is going to be like, well, today looks like one that you're not going to.
Let's see where today's going.
Yeah. Well, there's a chance that you're not going to. But if you always do, like a person like myself, and I know you do too, there's certain rules that it's like, if you're the leader or whatever you want to call yourself, what you're the pack leader, right?
Pack leader as fuck.
That's right. Then it's your responsibility. Just like it's my responsibility with my little boy to make sure, you know, the certain rules I have in place to help him grow and develop. And I have to make sure I can't slack on that, because that's going to do a lot of damage if I get lazy. So people do get lazy, but more so what I'm seeing is people are so busy and their lives are so complicated that it's hard for them to even fit in the dog. You know what I mean? To get the dog raised up properly, because it takes a few years to get a dog in a spot that you like. If even for a professional to get a dog to a point where you don't really have to watch him all the time, it's going to take a few years, you know, to really get it making good judgment all throughout its day. It takes time because it's a puppy. If you get it as a puppy, it's going to go through its adolescence. It's going to go through all that bullshit. And they can develop stuff that lingers with them into adulthood that you're not going to be able to get rid of. Like there's dogs that teeth and they start biting on furniture because they're teething. And next thing you know, the dog is like 10 and it's still doing it because it was just never addressed along with everything else. So address things with your dog. Pick something. Pick something small with your dog. This is what I want you to do. Pick something small with your dog. Once you learn how to do, you know, I'm like, we're not teaching you how to.
Once you learn how to discipline.
Learn how to discipline. And then once you do that, pick a small conversation with your dog. Just pick a small common disagreement. Don't go after the biggest one yet. Pick a small one, like the door, going out the door. That's why people start with that, because it's small. You can probably win that one. You can probably get the dog to listen to you. And then make sure that cleans up. And then pick another one, right? Do this, but at the same time as you're doing this, the other side is, what Rush is going to fill you in. While you're doing that and you're working on these little problems here and there, because it's not, those things aren't really the big deal. It's the relationship. You're helping the relationship. You're also going to want to learn a little bit about structure and to get a more holistic approach so that you're not having your dog crazy brain because it does whatever it wants, but you're just going after these little moments. You want that holistic approach where, yes, you go after these moments so that your dog can gain respect for you, but you're being proactive and developing a life where it's not leaving a whole lot of room for nonsense. Yeah. You know, if your dog's on the bed, it's not at the door barking at the dogs, or it's not or barking at the guests, or it's not on the counter, right? So this is being proactive. It's using structure to be proactive. You tell your dog to go on place simply because you know if it's there, it's not doing anything else wrong. And therefore, it doesn't develop new associations or patterns. The way we look at it is if you don't know what your dog's doing, there's a chance it's developing new associations and bad behaviors that you don't even know is happening. You want to know where your dog is up here. So when you're not ready for them to go have newest do shit around your house. And what our buddy says, one of my buddies says, is he says that if your dog's not sleeping, he's getting in trouble. And I think that's a great little way to put it. It's like, what else are they going to be doing? They're either going to be sleeping or getting in trouble. So just tell them to go lay down over there. Right. And don't feel bad for it. You want to know why you feel bad for it? Because you don't walk them or you don't hike them. Right. If you had a hike in every day, you're not going to feel bad for telling them to go over there, but I can't hike them because I'm busy. And I see that. It's not necessarily because people are lazy, it's because they're busy. But you got to make time for your dog and you got to have a holistic approach. And I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about it, because you were talking about it earlier today. And I really like the way that you were thinking. I was enjoying listening to you about how you look at the dog's life holistically. And that's in your program and how you send you set your owners up to understand that it's not just punishing your dog for jumping on people.
Yeah,
it is the way you live with your dog. And it's this holistic approach. And I just love the way you were explaining it earlier today. So give me a break and
I think that punishment, because it's a lot of what was spoken about during this conversation, is, and it's spoken about because it's so important, right? Obviously it's important. You want to end a behavior, I agree. You got to punish.
Yeah, there's no way around.
But, and there's a very big but to it, if all you do is punish your dog and you never fill your dog in with anything else, then it's very unfair to your dog. Because I think as much as dogs have evolved as much as dogs have evolved with humans, right? They've been living with humans for a long time. They're still not natural to living here, right? So we take this animal that's essentially a wild animal, we bring a predator to make it even better. We bring it into our homes and we expect it to just not eat the steak that's on the counter when it's a predator. It's a carnivore, it eats steak, but don't eat that one, right? And we expect it to not rip apart the soft, fluffy couch and sleep inside of it, but it wants to have a den, right? And we expect it to not shit and poop and pee on the floors, but it needs to go to the bathroom, right? And all these things that we just expect it to do because it's a dog and it should know and it's cute and it's fluffy and all the things that we think of dogs. And then when it does all those things that are totally natural for it to do, it's natural for it to bark at the UPS man, to eat the steak, to do everything that you don't want your dog doing, is it natural for it to do? We then get upset. And then many times what people do is like, how do I stop this behavior? And that the straight answer is you punish that behavior. But the problem with that is you haven't really helped your dog learn how to live in your house. And learning how to live in your house isn't just don't eat my steak and don't destroy my couch. It's, yeah, don't do those things. But also here's what you should do. Here's how you fill in everything else about your life in my home so that you won't even feel the need to do that anymore, right? Because otherwise it's so unfair, right?
Let me tell you something. The way you're explaining things, I just love it today. So keep going. I'm going to listen to the replay because it's so clear. It makes perfect sense to me. They won't have the desire. First of all, you're right, punish it. But there's something you just said that I wanted to pause and go back to, but I'm not going to be able to remember exactly how you said it. But you just said that you're tell them not to do this. Of course, tell them not to do it. But tell them what to do instead. That right there. So the old phrase, correct and then direct.
Right.
You can't just catch your dog doing something wrong and then go and correct it, probably improperly because you're frustrated and blah, blah, and using all this emotion, which is damaging. And then that's it. You punished it and you got rid of that, but you're not telling the dog what it should be doing throughout the day instead. And then another thing you said, dude, you said teach a dog how to live in your house, like how to live their life in the house to a way that's going to be harmonious with you, that's not destructive and causing a ton of stress. I just never thought about that. I have thought about it, but not quite like that. Like you're taking an animal and you're teaching it how to live in a modern day house. And there are rules. In a modern day house, you probably don't want them digging into the furniture. You don't. So yeah, you'd punish that. But you can also just be very preventative by saying in the living room, when we're not doing something together, over there. When we are doing something together, well, we're doing something together, so that's not a problem because I'm interacting, monitoring your behavior. But this is where people fall off is that they'll do something with the dog and then they'll go and do something themselves and not even tell the dog what to do. And the dog's free to come up with their own.
And like you kind of use like the parenting example a couple of times when you're explaining things. And if you go along that route, like you have how old is Jesse? 2 years old?
Almost
2 years old, right? If you don't tell him what to do, he's going to do things you don't want, right?
That's right.
Like he's going to take the markers and draw on the floor.
He sure is.
Right? And what do you do? Like, don't draw, or what did I tell him? Don't draw there, draw on the board.
Yes.
Right?
You also said, it was so perfect. I wish I had a camera on you. And it was so good the way you interacted with him. I was really enjoying watching it. But you were like, oh, nope, don't draw on the floor. We draw up here. And I think he thought about it again. You said, don't draw on the floor or else we can't do this anymore. Yeah. And you were calm about it. But I knew for a fact, because I was watching you, I knew for a fact that if he went back to the floor, you would take it away. You would be like, okay, we're done. And you might even explain it. You might, well, because you did this. But you would fall through.
Right.
I know you would. I knew you would. But he never did. He listened to you and he was having fun. But you didn't just say, hey, don't draw on the floor. Hey, don't draw on the floor. You said, don't draw on the floor. Let's do this. Let's do this instead. So.
Again, and just I use that example, though, because everyone naturally humanizes dogs. It's what we do. We're humans. We think about everything in a human perspective, right? And I don't even think there's anything wrong with that, but do it right. Because you wouldn't leave a child, if you're parenting a child or watching a kid or whatever, you wouldn't leave them to, once you stop them from doing something, just figure out what else they're allowed to do, right?
I would hope not.
Right. A good parent or somebody who's raising a kid, whatever it is hopefully going to then step in and be like, this is what you could do, though. This is what I do expect of you. This is what I do like you to do. And it makes me happy when you do these things, right? And ultimately, that's how you hopefully raise a good kid, right?
Hopefully.
And
we'll see.
And with our dog, we'll come back for another 20 one in 18 years.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
But like, I think that's the part that's missing from the humanization of dogs is like we cut it short and we think of them like just as the infant stage, right? And we forget like they move right past that after 2 weeks.
Oh, they're gone.
And they're like, and if you don't give, just to circle back to my point about the structure things, I really think this is so important that when you don't give that bubble basically for the dog to live within, which is what structure is, and all you do is say, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, but you don't say, here's how to live here. Here's how to enjoy life with me. And here's how I'll enjoy life with you. Then you're not making a fair, like I called it a deal earlier, right?
Yeah.
With your dog. Because the deal you make with your dog is basically like, don't do these things, follow these basic rules, and everything else will be taken care of by me, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't like actually keep up, if you don't give your dog like what its side of the deal is, then it's not, don't be upset about it. It's
they'll totally be unfulfilled and they'll find a way to take it out of your house.
And he's going to, because punishment works, I think, best because it works, but punishment works best when it's attached to also the structure side of it. Also what else to do instead, because if not, eventually the dog comes back around to that same thing and he's like, fuck it, I really want that steak.
Yeah, and right? No one's looking, right? You know,
but if you don't eat that steak, go lay down in your place. This is what you should be doing basically on a daily basis, is you should be hanging out over there while I'm hanging out here, and you should be eating your food in that spot while I eat my food in this spot. And you create this life with him, right? That's what routine is. You create a life with him. Then he never thinks about going back over there again, because you've knocked that one out, and you've just created this pattern of daily living.
And they
with
stay
him
in that pattern
that doesn't so include that thing.
And you create this pattern that they're fulfilled in.
Yeah,
like I do with my personal dogs, and I've had multiple personal dogs growing up. I've really kind of learned how to live with them in a way that's simple and easy for me, simple and easy for them, and all of us are fulfilled. And it doesn't take that much. Okay, my dogs here, for example. I mean, when we're not directly interacting with them, they're over there relaxing. Riggins has more freedom because he's earned it at this point. I trust him to make his own decisions. And of course, dogs hopefully do get to the point where they can, you don't have to get onto them, but it takes longer than you think, I think. They're not ready at 6 months, guys, and they're not ready at a year either, or a year and a half, or even 2 years at most point, unless you've really done your work. So they know their drill, and they're completely happy with it. They know they go out in the mornings to go potty. They don't do it until I'm ready. I get out of the room. I get my coffee. I do my stuff. They stay on the beds, and Riggins doesn't even get up. He knows that it's not time yet. Once I start heading down those stairs, I turn back and I'm like, Riggs, now it's time. We do breakfast. They come back up. They lie on the bed. I don't have to tell them because I pattern it in. They know eventually. The reason why they're so calm, they know eventually because I've proven them over and over again. We're going to go for a walk or a hike or something when I'm ready. Because one of my rules is don't complain. I don't want to hear you over there whining because you want to go for a walk. That's just going to get me to correct you, right? I'll get around to the walk. I don't want my dog being pushy. So they learn to wait for me, and I'll get around to doing things with it. And I do things with them every day. And I found out for my particular dog what exactly the amount they need. Turns out one good thing in the morning, one good thing in the afternoon. The rest of the day, it's relaxing. And it works for me and my little pack here. It doesn't take that much. An hour a day of, even for 30 minutes here and 30 minutes later on, your dog will be pretty satisfied. The rest of the time, you're going to be applying the word of the night, structure, which pretty much means if I'm not doing something with you, you're waiting over here in a command or, on your comfy bed. At most of the time, it's this luxuriously comfy bed.
So yeah, he looks so comfortable.
they can have whatever. You can put a bone on there, whatever. I'm not saying that it's to get the dog got to wait there bored. They can do whatever over there within reason, but they stay there and wait until you're ready to go get them and say, okay, let's do stuff together again. That's the secret. That's what it all is. It's just instead of leaving them to their own devices when you're not paying attention to them, tell them to go over there and lie down and make sure that they stay there.
Right.
Until you're ready. Just that alone is going to take care of your indoor behavior. And now we covered that a lot.
And indoor behavior comes first. You don't get good outdoor behavior before that.
Indoor.
Yeah. All right, I want to switch gears.
Switch it.
So
hard.
So
real hard.
When we were eating before the show, before we started this conversation, you said something to the effect of something like, who knew dog training would be so much more than just dogs, or something
training. Yes.
Something to that effect. I don't remember exactly how you said it.
It's pretty much it though. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean by that? And with you?
I meant that, cause I got into dog training because I was interested in dogs, but what I didn't realize is that how much it actually had to do with humans, how much of it was going to teach me about the world I lived in, about how humans struggle and what they struggle with, and about life in general. I didn't realize it was going to have this big, I didn't realize how important it was. You know, I knew I enjoyed dog training, and I knew I was really, it helped me. I did it because I liked it. I interacted with these dogs because they fulfilled me, and it made me a balanced person. But when I started really doing it professionally a lot and helping people, I didn't realize how much of an impact I was actually having on the communities and the people that I was helping. It was so much more than just helping the dog. When you get to doing this with dogs who are really struggling and families who are really struggling, they are so stressed and they are so, like, they're sleep deprived. They're emotionally just out of whack, and you're talking to these people, and it's really a huge contributing factor, if not a lot of it, is from this dog causing all the stress. And once you help them with their dog, not only does the dog get better and the dog's doing great, but you see this person heal, because then now they have the stress down enough where they can freaking breathe throughout their day. Life is already stressful enough without a dog. And then you get a dog who's driving you insane and causing extra stress in your life. People are about to crumble. I talk to people that are on the verge of crumbling from a dog.
Yeah.
It's just too much stress. I've already have enough to worry about, and this dog is killing me. And it's almost, you see people, the truth comes out in families. When you're, especially early on when you're in people's houses, you see people arguing in front of you about the dog. And like, you see marital issues, and you see issues with the structure of the family. And now you know that if you can help them become more cohesive, you're going to help the dog. So all of a sudden you're not even worried about the dog, because you got that. You're worried about helping this family work together as a team and understand where the dog fits in and their role, and encouraging people, adults in the house, to stand up and take control of your house, tighten up your ship with your kids and your dogs. Like, come on, this is nonsense. It's nonsense in here. No, we don't need to live this stressed with our kids and with our dogs. And I know that for a fact, because I do this for a living, and I grew up in where the adults were in control. The kids weren't running the show. That's what I know. And I know you know something about that too. It's possible, and I know what it looks like. So helping people get over that, and it's more than just dogs. This is huge. It's something that people are lacking. The understanding, I think, of how to gain control and harm. I don't even like the word control, but how to gain harmony in their house by using structure and implying, you know, consequences for breaking these rules the same way any system would, the school systems do. You need to have this in your house. And who cares if my kid makes its bed? Who cares? It's just going to sleep in it. It's not that we care that the bed's made from the kid. It's that they're doing something they don't want to do because they were told to, simply because they were told to. If you can accept that as a child or as a young dog, you're going to have an easier time. But if somebody doesn't tell you that until you're an adult, you're going to have a little temper tantrum because nobody got it up. Nobody had that conversation with you that you can't always get what you want. Sometimes you have to do things you don't like to do because that's life. If we don't do this with our dogs and our kids, then they're fragile. They're fragile, and then they become adult versions of themselves, but they're still fragile. And dogs are dangerous that way. Dogs need to learn to listen young. Otherwise, when they're adults, they're more likely to really. And when you're trying to do it and you have never done it, the dog's five, you're going to have a lot harder of a time, right? You know, not that it's not possible, but I'm going on a tangent, but I wanted to say that I feel like I learned so much more about life in general.
How has it helped you
through dogs?
You kind of mentioned that it's helped you.
Yeah, it has. It helped me so much with the people aspect part. Helped me realize that I'm valuable to a community. I'm valuable to people, because I think with dogs, when you get into dog training, I was into it not because it was me and dogs, and it was a comfort that I was amongst these animals that I felt understood me, and I understood them. And for me in the beginning, it was aside from humans. It was me and the dogs. This is what I cared about. But that was part of my problem in my life as a young man, is me versus the world, me versus the world. And that caused me a lot of frustration that I didn't know about. And it caused me a lot of issues. But then once I started dog training dog training in the way that I'm doing it now, where I'm doing it so much that I'm interacting with people as often as I was, I started to learn that what I was doing was helping people so much that it gave me a new perspective on people. Because I was like a lot of dog trainers, a lot of animal people. There was a point in my life in my 20s and shameless, I'm a little ashamed to say that even into my 30s, that it was me and my dogs and the couple of people that I love, and then the rest of the world, that, you know, they do what they do. But dog training has helped me find joy in helping other people, and really enjoying helping people, and realizing that if I can give to my local community, then I'm doing good, and I'm de-stressing on a daily basis. I'm cleaning up houses, and I'm making them less stressful and more harmonious, which means people can then enjoy life more. People can then do more with their dog and their kids and create good memories, before we all die.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think, damn, I don't know what to say after that.
But I'm just saying, it's a much bigger thing, man.
Yeah, since I've started training and networking and trying to put myself out there and then creating this podcast, I've had the opportunity to speak to a lot of good trainers, right? From all areas of the world, really. And one of the things that I found in common with a lot of the good ones that I've spoken to is how many of them have said that dog training has done something more for them than just training dogs. And I don't know, I've done other things, but I've never had something that I considered a career until dog training. So I don't know if this exists in other things, but I think it's something that is unique to dog training in a certain sense, because what we do is, so it's a very interesting thing that we do, right? We're helping people, we're learning about behavior, we're in turn usually working on ourselves.
Let me go back to that when you're done. Remind me to go back to how it's affected me mentally.
Yeah.
And yeah, go do your thing though.
And I just find that so fascinating how many people, because I started talking about this idea, right, that this is somehow intertwined with personal development. And then I've seen other trainers talk about it. So first I thought it was kind of just me, right? Which, okay, that's cool. Then I started to see other trainers talk about it. And then I started to interact with a lot more trainers and started to have these long form conversations with trainers and start to see that this is a trend with dog trainers who are successful and good at what they do, that generally there's some sort of connection to personal development in their life. And as they got more into that, they got better at training dogs. And as they got better with the dogs, they got better with the personal development. And it's like this beautiful cycle that's created. And I think it's something really special and unique to this. I'm sure it exists somewhere else too,
I'm
going to continue believing that it's special to what we do.
You're absolutely right. And I can't believe that that didn't hit me, because the truth is it made me do what you were referring to as personal development,
yeah,
personal growth, and working on myself. Because when you're working with a dog, you have to have control of your emotions. And that's very hard for somebody like myself to do naturally without dog training. I've always struggled with that because I'm a very emotional person, or I was much more so. And I use art as an outlet for that. But dogs helped me learn how to have control over my mental space at will. I knew I had to learn that skill to be great at it. And so I focused on that skill heavily, and the benefits were, yes, I became better at dog training, but my life improved. I've seen things differently, and I felt better. And so dogs were healing me, I suppose. They were encouraging me to, and they did a lot for me. They changed me. Like you said earlier today, it changed you forever when you had these certain experiences with dogs, and you learned how important it is about your energy and the way you think and all this stuff and the personal growth. It changed me. It changed a lot of people I talk to, let's say, they've had that too. Some people call it getting bit by the bug, but once you like the dog trainer bug, once you have that experience that I had, or I don't know if everyone's having the same experience as me, but I had a lot of healing mentally. I was able to think a lot clearer and better and articulate better because I was focusing on controlling my emotions. Because when I'm interacting with this dog, I'm in this moment and I want to project what I need to project. So I'm shifting through gears of my mind, and I've learned how to control my my emotions, which for me, without dog training, who knows if I would ever learn that as rapidly as I did. It helped me grow.
You're learning through experience, like the dogs.
I was. And they will correct you if you're wrong, though. So I'd get corrected if my space was wrong. So if I got frustrated, the dogs don't listen to you as well. So that's a punishment for me, right? I have to make sure that I'm in this calm place where I'm able to observe things objectively. That passively kind of, of course, I'm not passive because I'm leading, but my head is so clear. I'm seeing the information so clearly because I'm not stressed out about yesterday, even though I have shit going on in my life, guys, just like you do. When I've trained myself that when I work with a dog, I go into flow state and I'm there. And in that moment, it's like painting a picture. My brain gets a break. I'm here. I'm with this dog. It's not about my problems that I have tomorrow or the next day. All that's gone. When I'm working with a dog, I don't even know about my life. I don't know about it. I'm not even thinking about anything, but what I'm doing with that dog, and that in itself, doing that every day, having hours of that a day where I'm just in the moment, has been healing my brain for years. And yeah. without dog training, I find myself, I'm not as clear-headed because I'm not going into this place in my head where I'm living in the moment I'm forced to for hours a day in order to get the best results.
Yeah, I found that I was forced to be present because I can literally get bit and hurt if I'm not.
You can get bit and hurt,
right?
Yes.
And like, obviously, a lot of other things can happen too. Like, a dog cannot be trained properly. But like, if you want to take it all the way, it's like you can get bit. You yes. can get hurt.
The more serious the dog, the more yeah. in the moment you have
and,
to be.
A lot of that I've been telling you a lot about working with the groups of dogs because that's where my experience started.
I know. Yeah.
But when I was with, let's say 30 dogs, right? And like I needed them all to chill because I don't like headaches, right? And I needed them to follow directions and I couldn't have dog fights while I'm watching a group of dogs. And everything that I expected of this group, if I'm not present with them, they know it and it doesn't matter that I'm there.
You might as well be on yourself.
Right. And it forced me into this space of being present for a couple hours at a time, which I never did that before in a real way in my life. And it definitely carried over into becoming a part of me, right? And I know if I'm working with a dog and I'm not fully present, that I'm not training the dog, right?
Yeah.
I'd feel it's wrong. It doesn't feel right.
You could feel it internally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll share something with you. I feel that sometimes when I'm doing Shadow Week because I'm not fully there.
You're teaching and training.
Let me tell you something. I did a potty without anybody there today when you guys left. And when I do potty breaks, I do training. And I was so much more loose. And I'm like, they'll never see me like this. The way that I actually am when there's no camera, usually, sometimes there's glimpses of it. But when I'm free and I can just be there with the dog, it feels so freaking good because it allows your brain to stop thinking about everything else. You're just there with that dog and that's all that matters in that moment. And I got that today and I was like, oh yeah, I missed that. Although Shadow Week is beneficial to me so much that it's worth it. For me to be present, I have to ignore. And just like, you know, to give you the authentic experience, you would have to be a fly on the wall, you know? Because I'm interrupted. The truth is I am interrupted because I have to think about what I'm doing and I have to talk about what I'm doing instead of staying connected with the dog and working the entire time with the dog. Today we went on a hike with one of our dogs, man, and it was just like that. During that hike, that's where I was. My mind was not wandering. And I've trained my mind that when I'm working with dogs, that's where it goes. I don't even have to try anymore. It just happens for me. I go there in that place. And when I'm not there, it feels off. It feels almost wrong, you know? So that's the only way I like to train. I generally just don't train unless I'm able to do it my way and allow myself to go there. Yeah. You know?
All right. One last question before we wrap it up. This is a question that I've asked every trainer I've spoken to on this show.
Let's do it.
So if there was one thing that you can broadcast to every dog owner of the world that you wish that they would know, what would it be?
Really? Every dog trainer in the world. That's
every dog owner, not trainer.
Every dog owner.
This is not for, even though dog trainers watch this, but what would be one thing that you wish you could, that every dog owner would know?
I am going to think on this one. I hope you don't mind.
No, think.
Because this is huge to boil it down to one thing. Because you guys, everybody who watches me knows that's not how my brain works.
Right.
I'm going to rattle off 20 of them and then you can decide. Every dog owner, if I could give one message, like the way it's working for me is if I pretend I was going to die, like tomorrow I'm just not here, right? What would I leave?
What would be that message you'd want to leave?
Phew. What would I leave with everybody? Respect the dog. And I know that's a simple statement and it's vague, but it starts from the beginning. Before you get the dog, respect the dog by knowing what you're getting and knowing if your life can fit it in. Know if you have if you're ready for the dog, because it's not fair for the dog. It's disrespectful to the dog that you're going to get when you get it on a whim. You're not prepared. The respect goes so far with respecting the animal, okay? Respect it enough to get it trained. Respect it enough to know your shit. I don't know why that came to my head, but because it did. Compassion was the first one. I've said that before. But I think if you're very, very much putting the dogs, if you're being respectful to the dog and you think about that from the beginning, it's all going to take care of itself. You'll make sure your dog's taken care of. You'll make sure they learn a communication with humans training. You'll make sure they get what they need. You would have thought before you got the dog, so you got the right breed at the right age, at the right time for you. You take it more seriously. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Take dog ownership a little bit more seriously. I think we all need to. We plan when we have kids most of the time. And like I said before, if we were going to have an elephant come live with us, we'd probably, you know, in 12 months, we'd probably study about the elephant. I would encourage dog owners, if this is to take the process more seriously of getting a dog and raising a dog and living with a dog, please stop getting them as if it's just casual, because dogs are all over the country are being, they're being suffering a little bit more than they have to, because people aren't taking dog ownership seriously. So take dog ownership seriously and enjoy.
I love that. Let's end it on that note. Respect your dogs. All right. Thanks, man. That was awesome.
Thank you guys for watching. Everyone who watched, and we're going to end it on that note. Love you all.